James Lowe, the conductor of the Spokane Symphony, with a whole month ahead of him. Here you are, and hello, James.
Good morning.
And quite specifically then, you know, let's trace what happens as you're leaving now, just in a few days. Are you exhilarated? Are you exhausted? Describe this month of creating five programs and creating a medium and doing everything you've done in four weeks.
Exhilarated and exhausted. I'd say some from column A and some from column B, really. No, I've had a great time, and we've recorded for 6 weeks now.
I guess it is, yeah.
We recorded for six weeks, and we had a week off in the middle.
Yeah.
And it's been incredible. I have to say, the concerts that we're putting out, the digital series, it's some of the work I think I'm most proud of my entire career. Mm-hmm. I think it's really great. The orchestra have been phenomenal. I really didn't do anybody any favors with the repertoire choices. It's hard rep. We hit the ground running. And after a year of really not playing together, getting back on stage, it's been astonishing. And going through all these things, playing with masks, playing with much more distancing. You know, string players don't have anyone to turn their pages for each other now. It's a whole new thing in reinventing how we record concerts from the ground up. It's been a monumental effort from everybody, but I'm so proud of the work. And as I say, the orchestra have done a phenomenal, phenomenal job.
Well, certainly the attitude. I mean, I guess there's a lot of things that are obvious, but go ahead and state a few more of the obvious.
Well, I think attitude is you've hit the nail on the head, really. I mean, I've worked with many orchestras in many places where you wouldn't have that drive and that desire and the joy, frankly, of playing. I think that's what makes this orchestra very special, is that it's full of people who just love to make music. And I know that sounds like a very obvious thing to say. Well, of course, you're an orchestra, that's what you do. But it's not a given at all. It's just been the most enjoyable process. It's been, of course, a huge amount of work for everybody, but so worth it.
And even from the first notes of the Dvorak Wind Serenade, I was so aware that there was just all of this melding and just falling into the groove and just virtuoso playing. We didn't sense any lack of anything in that.
I think that's the amazing thing, is that falling into the groove is the right way of putting it. We were back on stage in a very different way. Also, you know, when you go through, and of course you get temperature checked and everybody's being COVID tested twice a week, there's a kind of a certain tension. And all of a sudden we sat on stage, tuned up and played, and there it was again, like we'd never been away.
Yeah, and it certainly came off that way in that. And then the creating of the medium was fascinating to me, because I guess it wasn't a tabla rasa. Other imaginative people have used the technology well in the last year. Yet, I think you folks really did a lot in creating a medium. Talk about kind of the thoughts, the plans, and then maybe some of the execution of that.
Well, for me, having an orchestra on stage in an empty hall is always a kind of a rather sad thing to watch. So I wanted to try and think of a way that we could bring everything a bit more alive. And so the idea was that each concert has a theme, and we explore it in ideas as well as music. And we get great experts from the Inland Northwest to come and talk with me about these ideas and thread these themes through and see how the same thing comes out in painting or in physics or in religion or in art. And you can see that these things are the expression in music the same way. From the technical side, I have to say Hamilton Studio have been phenomenal. Don Hamilton has been irrepressible the whole project. He loves the last Waltz movie, and yeah, we all know Don. The way we filmed has been very different. Ordinarily, you would have a very strict camera script and say in bar four you go to the first oboe, in bar eight you go to the second bassoon, yada yada. What we've done instead is have about 15 cameras on stage, including now two flying cameras, and they, of course, know the music. They come to all the rehearsals, and before each recording session, we work through who the important people are at what place. But then it's really that they just film, and then at the end we edit together the footage we have. And it means, I think, it's a much more collaborative way of working than normally it would be with filming an orchestra. And that's been another joy for me, is, you know, channeling my kind of Cecil B. DeMille things with proclivities with Don and with the editor Hannah Sander and the producer Jennifer Gatz, has been phenomenal. I mean, really an amazing team to work with. And it does feel different. I think it gives it visually a different kind of energy than if it's a more kind of static production.
Well, and talk a little bit more about that, too, because it's not like probably you had everything completely planned. You probably had surprises on the way, and you had to do things out of order, and you had to record some music and then figure out some interviews and put all that together. I assume you were constantly improvising and changing, weren't you?
A little bit, but amazingly less than I thought. So we realized that the best way of recording this was to record in batches. So rather than have here's one whole concert with just the strings, here's one with the winds, and here's one with the brass, we would mix it up. And so the themes would unify it rather than the instrumentation, which meant that each week would be, you know, we'd record two Mozart symphonies for two different episodes, we'd record two different Haydn symphonies for different episodes. And we planned in advance the themes and the interview, who we would interview and how they would fit together. And for the most part, it's gone remarkably, it's kind of just all fallen beautifully into place. Of course, that's not to say that we haven't hit snags and challenges and improvised on the fly a little bit. I think that's the case with any production like this that's technically challenging. But it's been really satisfying for me to start to see this grow episode by episode, and this journey continue. And although we've recorded everything now, we're still in the process of editing. We're about to release episode 3 this Friday, and then every 2 weeks it's 4, and then the fifth one comes out in a month. And I'm very excited about it. I think it's important, by the way, to say that these episodes are on-demand streaming for a year. So it's not, if you've missed the first couple, you can still go back and watch them. And I would definitely start from the beginning, I think, because it's an evolving journey, the whole process.
And it struck me in the interviews that I've encountered that, if you'll pardon the word, they're a little bit funky. They're not all scripted out and everything. There was a real humanity, I felt, in the verbal communication.
Absolutely, and this is something that I think we're all very, very keen not to do, is to script out any of the conversations. They were absolutely, they just recorded us for 15 minutes and edited together what they had, and I think that's the right way of doing it, because like you say, it keeps it fresh, it is just a conversation. And one of the other elements that I wanted to do in this series is to highlight our musicians individually and pull a few of them out, because they all have, not only most of them have incredible second skills, which is quite annoying, really. You know, we have a world-class photographer, we have all manner of amazing skill sets that are, as well as the musical skill sets. And every individual in the orchestra has a lifetime of experience of making music. And I wanted them to be able to project some of that out to the audience too. And again, because if you're seeing people massed on stage, it feels a little bit distant, so it's another way of a little bit breaking down this barrier.
More than a little bit. I mean, you know, when you can't see a smile on a face and things like that, that is we're all used to it by now, but it's a thing. Also, a little bit more of the looking at the man behind the curtain, the four-letter word of edit sounds so simple, and yet people that don't do editing don't realize the sheer quantity of work involved in editing.
It's time consuming, to say the least. So the technical process is that, you know, of course with COVID as well, we've had very limited recording sessions. We can only record for 45 minutes at a time and stop. So we've lost a lot of rehearsal time and a lot of recording time. So it's even more remarkable that, ordinarily if you're making a CD recording, for example, you have a lot more time for a lot less music. So that's another amazing thing about the orchestra, is being able to simply turn it on and play as if they're playing for a CD recording and pretty much get things in a couple of takes has been astonishing. But yeah, so we'd do that, and then the first thing would happen is then we'd do an audio edit, listen to all the footage and figure out how that can all fit together in the best possible way. And then that goes to the video editor, and she has to coordinate the different sound edits with the video and make it look seamless. So yeah, it's a lot of hours of work, but it's fascinating, and it's a new world for me. I've not been doing that kind of work before, so it's been hugely fun.
And then we've had, as you mentioned, two of the concerts have already been released and are And our Arata, or the third one of the five releases this Friday. So it's on an every 2 week basis. So this Friday, the last day of April, will be the release of the third one. So let's look forward for a minute, because and talk a little bit about individualism, and then about how you dealt with that musically.
I'm really interested by this idea of how societies work. So how does an individual fit in society? Do you just say, well, I'm going to do whatever I want, leave me alone? Or do you say, I bow to a higher group and I totally slot in with that and I give up my identity? And I think that a musician is a great metaphor for that, because as a musician, you practice, you spend your whole childhood learning an instrument. You give up a lot of your teenage years simply in just being in a practice room. You go to music college, you work really hard, you get on the audition circuit, you finally get in an orchestra, and you sit there and some conductor says, no, don't do it like this, do it like that. And you have to subsume all of this wellspring of musical knowledge and instinct into something bigger than yourself. Now, it doesn't mean that you give up your entirely your personality, because there are moments where your personality really has to come out and shine. And so that balance, I think, is a really good metaphor for how society works at its best. We're individuals. We have our own way of doing things. We have our own points of view and opinions. But ultimately, we all come together to make something greater than any one of us can be. So the whole episode was trying to explore that theme a little bit. And so we go from a Haydn symphony, which uses many, many individuals in the orchestra, soloists, through to a Mozart symphony, where everything is just much more harmonious and everybody plays in much more as a whole unit.
Talk fairly exactly. Let's take the first violin section. How a first violin section with all those people whom you just described with their musical background don't neutralize each other, and it isn't just kind of the averaged out thing, but it's instead a heightened thing. You know, get real specific. How do you develop that within such a thing as a first violin section?
That's a great question. I think there is a danger of this neutralization you just said. I think that is the great danger that we always have to fight against, which is that, you know, a string quartet, for example, there's no conductor, but it's terribly free music. It just moves and breathes and goes, swims where it wants to swim. If you put the same, if you do that with 10 first violins, the first instinct is everybody thinks, oh, I don't want to be the one person that plays early or late. I've got to play with my colleagues. So very easily you revert to this kind of what I call a kind of vanilla ice cream way of playing. And then I think the conductor's job is to fight that. And my working theory that I think is right is that every good musician feels a phrase the same way. There's an expectation. If you've gone into it at this kind of speed and you're slowing down in a certain way, everybody's going to feel it the same way. It's like playing a pizzicato, a plucked note, right? I always say there's one musical moment where it belongs. You just play it there. It's really simple. But the minute you start to think about it, it's usually not together. And it's the same with the flexibility in every section of the orchestra, actually, is that once you realize that we are all feeling the music the same way, you're then free to be free with the music and still be together. And that is the holy grail that I'm always trying to scratch at.
And now for another behind-the-scenes thing, I've had some reportings from my brass player friends of that mountain to climb, because, among other things, they... pivoting the entire picture as an exhibition with all of those things played only by the pathetic two little lips of a brass player is a real challenge. Talk about putting that together.
It was a huge challenge. And as well, of course, I think that one of the hardest things about that was really we were playing with bell covers, which changes a lot of things. And if you've ever heard a brass player playing through a door, you'll know that the sound dips as any physical barrier between you and the sound. So playing in tune is much harder. Also, you're sitting now 9 feet apart from everybody, from your nearest colleagues. So as a brass player, usually if you start a note, the minute you're playing, you can't really hear very well what everybody else is doing. So these were huge challenges. And that week was, that was a mountain, absolutely, as you say.
Well, I've heard that maybe Leonard Bern's wife has patented a new tuba cover or something like that.
Well, if this pandemic carries on for much longer, I'm sure she'll make a lot of money from that invention.
There you go. And then in the last time we were together, we talked about the Mahler Fourth Symphony with the smaller orchestra. And I think at that point, it was still ahead of you, so talk about the, because I think that's fairly recently that you've recorded that.
Yeah, we just got that in the can finally Saturday afternoon. We finished at Saturday lunchtime. It's wonderful. It's an arrangement by a guy called Ian Farrington, who does a lot of kind of smaller arrangements, because, of course, the real Mahler 4, we can't simply have all those musicians on stage. Now, they wouldn't fit on the stage with the social distancing we have to record with. And I've done this arrangement once before, and I think it is a really successful arrangement. There's moments when you really forget that you've got a little small ensemble in front of you and not a whole orchestra. And it's also the Mahler Symphony, I think, that lends itself most to being more intimate. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we had Don Wolski, who is fantastic, and everybody knows in Spokane from the Inland Northwest Opera. She was the singer for the last movement, which is A Child's View of Heaven. And for me, she has the perfect voice for this, because you need a lighter, clearer voice that can sound a bit like a child. And I've heard so many recordings we've got a very heavy soprano singing it, and it just seems so incongruous. But then on the other end, right at the end, there's probably one of the most beautiful corners of all of music, when the boy that is being depicted basically transcends and turns into an angel or something above, something different, and sings, "There is no music on earth like there is in heaven." And that turning point, if you know, Bernstein and Ben Zander a few times actually recorded it with a boy soprano. Mm. And for the first part, that's fantastic, because the cheekiness comes through and the kind of the right kind of sound of voice. But then when it gets to that bit, they can never quite capture that transcendent moment. And I think that's what Dawn does beautifully, is that turning that corner from this light kind of quite almost grotesque poem, you know, about the child goes to heaven and they're killing an ox and it's all about food, to this moment where he switches to talking about music, and she captures that moment of transcendence so beautifully. It's such a joy, and that piece means so much to me.
So it's every 2 weeks that these are revealed. So this Friday, it's the individualism program, and then in 2 weeks, it's the program on light, and in 4 weeks from this Friday, the conclusion of this 5-episode series, Heaven and Earth, with the Mahler Symphony Number 4. And I'm going to interject a suggestion for people. If you haven't done this and you go to the symphony website to do this, for some of us of a certain age, there can be problems. And I really, 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 really recommend that when you sign up to do it, you try to do that sign up during business hours, so that if you run into any possible problem, then you could call and they could work you through it. Because it is, let's face it, a circuitous journey through there. And so the Symphony's box office, which is open every day from 9 to 5, and of course on Friday, when that will be released, then you could be signing up so that if you wanted to join in and on that third concert. But then, or if at any point you can sign up for the whole, all five. And then, but then uniquely on Saturday, the day after that sign up thing, the Symphony's box office will be open from 10 to 5 for calls and to help people bail out. Because let's face it, we're not all equal in the cyber world of doing that. So that needs to be said. So then just briefly and purposefully a little briefly, because it is such a shifting sand, what are some of the maybes beginning in September?
Well, maybe is the biggest word. And I think the one thing we've all been hit with COVID is the sheer unpredictability of life now. You know, we can't really say what it's going to look like in 2 weeks' time. I mean, now are we going to be in phase 2 or 3 in a month? Nobody really knows. So the way we're looking at it is that we're going to break the season into two parts. We're going to have a fall portion and then a spring portion. The fall portion will be announced kind of quite soon. And we will essentially wait a little bit, and through the summer we'll see what happens. And then we'll know how hard we can press the gas pedal in January. So that's the way we're planning, just to be as flexible as possible. And the idea is we'll have certain columns in the season, like Masterworks and Pops, like we normally do, and then wait a little bit and be a bit more reactive. And I do think that, you know, orchestras normally have a planning cycle of 1, 2, or 3 years in advance, which kind of, it's a bit of hamstrings us a little bit, I have to say, because there's some things happen in society and, you know, I don't know, a movie comes out and you want to do some music from it, or you want to do some music that relates to it, and you've already got, you know, you can't do anything for 2 years. That's a bit crazy. So I think that if COVID has broken that cycle of hyper long-term planning and made us be able to be a little bit more scrappy and reactive, I don't think that's a bad thing.
And so that will be what we'll watch for. And in the meantime, you get to go home to your wife and your farmhouse and your dog, and it's the perfect time of year to do this, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be very nice if the dog remembers me. But it's in total, it's 3 months this trip with quarantines on either end. So it's been a long chunk of time. But I really, you know, it's been such a fantastic couple of months here. I mean, really being back with the orchestra and being back making these recording projects, it's been really exhilarating, and it's been quite a shot in the arm, which is probably an appropriate metaphor nowadays.
The perfect metaphor for that. So, James Lowe, what a treat to get to see you twice in this time. So have a lovely trip back, and I wish you a really, really lovely summer.
Thanks, Vern. You too.